Well, I was watching the other day, on YouTube, there was a video, it's about 2 minutes long, about bears. And the video was showing a mother bear up in Connecticut trying to cross the road with her four cubs. I don't know how many of you have seen that video or videos like that. Some of you have, okay. Well, this one was shot back in March of this year. Up in Connecticut, it was a two-lane highway, and traffic was flowing, of course, in both directions. Well, this mother bear had to get across that highway. So the mother bear came out to the road, and as she stood there on the road, I think what happened was a lot of people were just surprised to see the bear on the side of the road. So one lady stopped her vehicle, and when she stopped her vehicle, the bear came out. Oncoming traffic from the other direction saw what was going on. That individual stopped. And when they stopped, here comes the mother bear and her four cubs. Now, mind you, as I looked at this video, I start seeing traffic just backing up, and people are probably wondering, why is everybody stopping here? Well, you couldn't help but to notice there was a mother bear, big black bear, on the highway, and she was trying to cross safely with her four cubs. Well, she managed to get across with two of them, and two decided, nope, they were going to play around on the other side of the highway. And so when the mother bear turned around and saw that two were missing, she crosses the highway again to go back after those two. Now, all of you who are mothers in this room will probably relate very well to this story, because as I watch this story, I saw mothers just probably sitting in their cars thinking, yes, that's my Joey. Yes, that's my Lisa. You know, I'm trying to go this direction. They want to go someplace else. And so it ended up, the mother bear crosses the highway again. She goes and she nudges the two cubs to get them to come on and to follow her. So she starts back across. They're following her, get halfway across the highway, and these two little jokers turned around and went back again. And one started climbing up a tree. Now, I know at this moment, you who are mothers, I know your blood pressure is probably at the top of your head, and if there's a switch to be found, those two are getting it. So she goes back across the highway. Now, mind you, it's interesting, traffic never moved. And so I'm assuming that the two vehicles that stopped first were mothers, and they were not allowing that traffic to go anywhere. And so Mama Bear goes back across the highway, and she does something very interesting. She lets these two cubs know, I mean business this time. So she reached down, and she literally just bit that little cub in the ear, jerked him up, went across the highway, set him down. It looked like she gave him some instructions. He stood there for a moment. Then she turned back to go after the other one, and the other one was sitting there like, I'm in trouble now. So instead of the little cub that she just disciplined, instead of him just going on with the other two, nope, he was following Mama Bear back to go after the other cub. And so when she got to the other cub, she applied the same discipline to that cub that she did with the other one. And so now Mama's got two cubs disciplined, now following her across the highway. And I thought it was really kind of interesting, because of the fact that it doesn't make any difference whether you're an animal or whether you're human. That mothering instinct is the same no matter what. And when I saw that, I thought about it. I thought about mothers. I thought about, you know, my kids growing up and how we would have done the same thing with them. You know, five kids, we're supposed to be going in this direction. There's always that one. There's always that one. I remember a time going to the Feast of Tabernacles. We were flying out to Rapid City, South Dakota, and we had to change two planes. And so the first half of the group was up with my wife. I was bringing up the rear with one. All I had the responsibility was for one. That was it. And so we're having to rush. We're having to get up to the gate because our plane was going to be leaving momentarily. We all arrived to the gate except for one. And I'm trying to figure out what happened to that one, because that one was right here next to me. And so my wife's looking at me like, And I'm looking at her like, they're your kids. You know, I got a suitcase. I got what I'm supposed to have. But that one. So, of course, you know, with that look, she never really said much. It was the look that she gave me that told me, I'm going to bite you if you don't go back and find our child. Okay, never said a word. I got it. So as I started back down into the airport, I only made it maybe a quarter of the way back when this crowd started kind of separating, and this little child was pulling her little luggage, singing very loudly, off key, "Blessed and happy is the man." She's coming through the airport, "Blessed and happy is the man," and everyone's looking at her, and she's all off key, and I'm thinking, I want my wife to go up so they know this is her child. And get this kid. And so what does she do? She comes right to me. And so we board the plane. But it's just interesting, when I was looking at that video, I went ahead and I said, I'm going to do a search. How many videos are out here about bears and bears protecting their cub? There were quite a few. I didn't look at all of them. I probably looked at one or two more. There was one that there was a wolf going after a cub, and mama bear don't play. No one is going to hurt her cubs. And each one that I saw, I think I watched one, maybe one or two others, the mother bear, that black bear, she's not going to play with you. If you go after her cubs, she's coming after you. And I thought it was interesting, as long as the traffic in Connecticut on that two-lane highway stood still, mama bear was going to do what she had to do to get her cubs safely across the highway. And that really got me to thinking about you and me as Jesus Christ continues to work with us. That mother bear, if it cost her to lose her life to save those four cubs, then that's what was going to happen. But she was going to get her cubs safely across that highway without fail. And yet, I also realized that those cubs learned something very important from the mother. And that is, you protect your own. You take care, of the family. And I'm quite sure as those cubs will grow up, they will probably find themselves in a similar situation where they will have to stand up for their family. They're going to have to stand up for the other cubs. Well, family, this morning, let's take a look at true love through a willing spirit of true sacrifice. True sacrifice. The title for the sermon this morning is The True Sacrifice. As I look around the room here, and as I thought of each one of you when I was putting this together, I could see any one of you being that mother bear. You are going to protect your family. You're going to protect your cubs, even if it means that you will have to make a sacrifice in many ways. You will sacrifice, as a child grow up, your dreams, your hopes, your desires, so that that child will have a future. This is how we are when it comes to raising our families. And we will sacrifice whatever it takes if it is going to be a positive benefit to our kids. We're going to make that sacrifice to help them along. Let's go over to John 15. What we want to do is we want to establish an understanding of true love. To get the big picture of a true sacrifice, let's go to the one that taught us about who he is still today, what he expects of you and me. We're going to look at true love in order to understand the true sacrifice. So John 15, if you're there, let's go ahead and start in verse number 1. Christ says, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser." He is the one, family, that brings us together, and he prepares us, and he makes us ready for his purpose and for his will. Verse 2, "Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes it away." And so what we are seeing here, as we stop and pause and take a look at each point here, if that branch is not bearing fruit, then that branch will be removed, because this point is dead. It's not going to serve any purpose. You know, when I was a kid growing up, I didn't understand, you know, the mother birds. The baby birds would be in their nest, and she would come by and she would feed them. And to me as a little kid, I thought, well, she must have got tired of feeding them, so she threw them out the nest. You know, I used to think, that is really cool. She just threw those little brats out the nest. But what I also noticed was the ones she threw out the nest, if they started flapping their wings, they were good to go. But the ones that didn't flap their wings, they were good to go. And she did not come back after those birds. She flew away, and the ones that could fly flew away with her. They followed her. They followed her on their journey. And here in this situation right here, he says that the Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes. Now go back to that mother bear. Oh, she got some good little pruning in to those two little cubs. When she bit them in the ear, I'm thinking, boy, that must be a very strong ear, because she was not letting that little head go. And that little head was getting the message, you know, regardless of what it wanted to do. You disobeyed, you didn't follow me, so hey, here's what's going to happen. You know, but I noticed the ear didn't come off. And I also noticed they followed Mama Bear from that point moving forward. And so he says, you are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. He says, abide in me and I will abide in you. And in order for us to get an understanding of true love, we have to be abiding in Christ, as Christ abides in you and me. So that means that we have to follow Jesus Christ. And he is going to work with us, and he is going to prepare us for the future in accordance to his will. As the branch cannot bear fruit itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. You see, we can't do anything on our own without that direction and guidance from Jesus Christ. We need Jesus Christ in our lives in order to move forward, to grow, to get up every day, to do the things that we do. We need Christ, and so we must abide in him. He says, I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him, you will bear much fruit. For without me, again, we're being reminded, we can't do anything without him. You know, I find myself in that position from time to time when I come to a stopping block or a roadblock in some part of my life. I begin to realize, hey, you've been trying to do this on your own. And we can't do that. We must have Christ within our life, guiding us, directing us, and moving us forward. He says, without me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is cast out as a branch, and he's withered. And they gather them and throw them into the fire, and they're burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, you will ask what you desire, and it shall be done for you. By this, my Father is glorified. You see, in our efforts, God becomes glorified in our obedience, our following his will and his Son, Jesus Christ. My Father is glorified that you bear much fruit, so you will be my disciples. You'll be my disciples, Christ says. And Christ wants us as his disciples. He wants to continue to teach us, work with us, help us to grow, and understand daily what that will of the Father is. Now, he doesn't reach down and bite us in the ear and drag us across the road, but he does allow trials sometime to come along to get our attention, to get our attention so that we know, hey, you know what? You need to make a U-turn up here. You need to turn around and let's get back on track and let's go in the direction that he wants us to go and to grow. Verse 9, as the Father loved me, I also have loved you. And he still does today. And he tells us to abide in his love. He says, if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love. So we have to do something ourselves here to understand true love and to get to the understanding of that true sacrifice. Family, we have to understand that Jesus Christ loves us. He says, if you keep my commandments, He says, I'm sorry, if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I keep my Father's commandments and abide in his love. You see, we on our own out here, we can't keep running back across the highway. Christ is leading us in the direction he wants us to go. And yet, we know that he will turn around and he'll come after us to get us to go back. We remember the story where the shepherd will leave the 99 in the herd and go after that one. And again, these scriptures came to mind as I continued to look at that two-minute little clip. There was a lot that I learned from that two-minute clip of that mother bear crossing the highway trying to get her cubs on the other side. He says, these things I have spoken to you that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full. He wants the best for you and for me. He loves us so much, he don't want us to have a glass half empty. He wants us to have a glass full, full of joy, full of love. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. And he says, greater love has no one than this, that one lays down his life for his friends. Now, this is true love. This is true love, to lay down your life for your friends. Is there anyone in our lives today that we would think, I wouldn't lay down my life for that individual? And it don't have to be outside of church. They could be right here within the church. Because our spiritual growth is about you and me. What we do every day, how we respond to things that affect us on a daily basis. Mama Bear was going to become the sacrifice for her cubs. If that sacrifice was required of her, she was going to do it. Those were her babies. She was going to take care of them. She was going to make for sure that those cubs made it safely across that highway. If one car moved, she was going to defend her position and take care of her babies. Nothing's going to happen to them. And you all who are mothers are the same way. You're not going to let anything happen to your babies, no matter how bad they are. Now, how many days you get up and you thought, oh, man, why? Well, because you loved them. You told them that you loved them. And I'm sorry, they're going to test your love for them. And then sometimes when they test your love for them, they think you don't love them when they go after you, when you go after them and bite them in the ear. But yet you tell them, this is going to hurt you more than it's going to hurt me. I remember that expression. I used to tell mom all the time, then don't do it. Don't, if it's going to hurt you, that mom, don't do it. You know, that made sense to me. You know, as a kid, you know, that opportunity we had to reason, you know, with mom, listen, if that is really going to bother you, don't punish me. It didn't work. I still got punished. What is the definition of a sacrifice? Now, I'm not talking about burnt offerings. We talk about burnt offerings. We read about burnt offerings. But let's look at another definition of the word sacrifice. So I went to that great book on the internet called The Dictionary, and I found the word sacrifice in it. And it says, it's an act of giving up something valued for the sake of something else regarded as more important or worthy. I really like that definition. The act of giving up something valued for the sake of something else regarded as more important or worthy. Now, family, I know every year when the Passover comes around, we have to examine ourselves. And many times we say, I don't feel worthy. Well, good, because that is a great start. Because then you will begin to know and understand that true love and what the true sacrifice really means to you and to me when we realize we are not worthy. But yet, we're going to look and be reminded again of that sacrifice that Christ made for you and for me. We're not talking, family, today about the animal sacrifice. We're not talking about a financial offering. We're talking about a true sacrifice of ourselves, of ourselves, what would you sacrifice your life for? And as I get towards the end, whatever we decide, I hope that we'll accept the ending of this conversation about a true sacrifice. John 15 and verse 14. He says, "You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me." You know, and when we start looking at our children, you know, sometimes we can say to our children, "You know what, you didn't choose me as your dad. You know, and I didn't choose you as my child." So there was another being in the mix here. And as Christ is telling us, "You did not choose me, I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should remain, and whatever you ask the Father in my name, that he may give it to you." We have to be bearing fruit. We can't just lay around doing nothing. I would imagine if I went out to Mrs. Carroll's farm, if she had some fruit out there just kind of laying around, I know what she'd probably do with it if it's not, you know, producing what she wants. It's going to get discarded. It's going to go away, or it might go in a jar of salsa that she may give to me. I'm not too sure, but just thinking out loud right now. Yes, that's what I thought. Thank you. So anyway, but we have to be bearing fruit, family. We can't sit here and do nothing. But when it comes to making a sacrifice, we have to be careful of making personal sacrifices. And we have to know when that personal sacrifice becomes necessary. Christ says there's no greater love than a person who would lay down his life. Now, none of us in this room can say, "You know what? I'll lay down my life for you." We can't say that. I don't know. We're not in that situation. We're sitting here now in this situation, and it may look very bad. And you may be having second thoughts. And you may look and say, I think you're not going to make it, because I'm not going to lay down my life for you. I was listening to a comedian one night, and he was talking about the Bible. And he said his wife asked him, when they got to this scripture where Christ said, "There's no greater love than a man who will lay down his wife for his friend," she asked him, she says, no, what she told him initially, he said, "My wife told me," she says, "I would die for you." She loved him that much, she told him that she would literally die for him. And he said he was moved by that. And then she was troubled because there was no response back from him. And so she had to ask him, "Well, will you die for me?" He said he thought. He didn't know if it was a trick question or not, but he thought. He just told her, "I'll take a punch in the jaw." And so she punched him in the jaw. That wasn't the answer that she was looking for. You know, she wanted him to say, "Yes, I will die for you." Well, I can respect his demeanor at that time, because you don't know. You don't know what you would do. But Christ is just telling us there is no greater love. And we'll go back and we'll take a look at that situation. Now, in the story of the mother bear would lay down her life for her cubs. That's her family. Our family, you and me, would we lay down our lives for each other? Not an easy question to answer. So I want to share a story with you. It's a true story. It just happened a few days ago. It was troubling. And I was caught in the middle of a crossfire. And I had to decide what I was going to do in this situation. On the way home from work, I decided I was going to stop by the laundromat. I had a few things I wanted to wash. Me, it's not that I'm cheap and don't want to buy a washer and dryer. It's just, on the way home, it's 30 minutes. I could go in, get my stuff done, and keep on going. If I'm at home, it's just me. I got a washer and dryer. You know, I may wash a shirt. I'll waste a whole tub of water just to wash a shirt. You know, or I may wash a few things. And so the girls keep getting after me about this. "Dad, what is wrong with you? Get a washer and dryer." I have one. It's called the laundromat. Works fine for me. Costs me maybe $5 to $10 a week. I'm okay with that. You know, what? I went by my little favorite quiet hole in the wall called a laundromat this week. This little place for 5 years, real nice, real clean, real quiet, and the attendants are always very, very nice in there. I think I know majority of them by now. The ones that's there on Sundays, the ones that are there during the week, I think I've met pretty much all of them. And they pretty much have gotten to know me. Well, the other night, I got there a little late, had a meeting after work, and I said, well, I remembered I had a few things that I threw in the car that morning. I want to run by the laundromat and wash these things. And so I did. Well, when I go in, I'll throw my stuff in the washer, and I go back out and sit in the car. I'll sit in the car because either I'm on the phone dealing with something or something I was reading, wanted to get caught up on. About maybe 15 minutes as I sat there, I heard this commotion. There was a gentleman on the other side, on the passenger side of my car, yelling and screaming at somebody on the driver's side of the car. So I looked up. Here was this little short lady, well, young lady. He was yelling, you know, obscenities to her, and she got very angry. She got very aggressive, so she started yelling things back at him. So I'm sitting here, and I'm like, well, I want you two to go find a park somewhere and go and work out your differences, because I don't want to be in the middle of all this mess. So I'm sitting there just kind of ignoring him as I try to. Well, it escalated. It got worse. And so this gentleman is yelling racial slurs now at this young lady. And it really got her stirred up. And this little short half-pint little thing over there, when she got stirred up, she was stirred up. So I said, okay, I'm in the middle of this. This is going to go bad. I already see it. It's going to go bad. So I stepped out of my car. When I stepped out of my car, it gave them the opportunity to see that, hey, somebody's sitting here. Somebody's observing what's going on. Well, the guy, he looked up. He saw me. He walked away. But she wasn't done with him because he said some pretty nasty things to her. And I was pretty disgusted with him as well. But then I had to stop for a moment, remember where I was, and also accept the fact that this isn't my fight. But yet here's a little half pint standing over here who's being assaulted by this little brute over here who's a racial bigot. And he's throwing these nasty, ugly little things at her. Now, mind you, I'm very annoyed at this point. Because, see, not only is it a bad scene, there are others that are around that were sitting in their cars or in the laundromat that heard the commotion that was going on. So I decided I would just walk in the laundromat, check on my clothes. When I did, she went to her corner. Every time he came close to me, he got further and further away from me. I got inside the laundromat. Everyone was a little tensed because of this commotion that just erupted. And there was a diversity of people in here, culturally, different genders. But this was really making people very, very uncomfortable. And when you start throwing racial slurs out at someone, of course, this makes everyone uncomfortable. And so this young lady, she said to this man, she says, you don't know anything about me. And she told him that her father was white and her mother was black and that he didn't have a right to be saying anything about her. So I thought, well, maybe they know each other. No, they didn't know each other. So I went back into the laundromat. I tried to make things a little easy with those that were in there, only to find out that this guy here is a real jerk, and he's been probably doing and saying some things the whole time while I was sitting out in my car. Well, long story short, this got worse. And the more this guy said, the angrier I became. The bad part about it is you couldn't take sides with either one of them. They both were wrong. They both were wrong. But what do you do in that situation? Now, I had to stop and I had to think. Okay, I'm the only black male standing out here. This white male over here is insulting this lady over here. And the reason that he started this was because he accused her of bumping his vehicle. Well, I remember when the lady came in, she was nowhere near his vehicle. But he decided he was going to pick on this little lady because he could. Now, for me, that's bullying. I don't like bullies. So you have to begin to realize when Christ says there's no greater love than a man who has sacrificed his life for his friend, we have to take this into consideration. We got to think about this. One, this is not my friend. Two, it's a situation of bullying. Three, both people involved in this whole scenario, they're both wrong. They're both absolutely wrong. And it's not my fight. So when that gentleman comes back into the laundromat, I begin to notice every time he came near me, he had to exit or go in another direction. It took me a while to realize. What God's Spirit does in a situation like this, if we let God's Spirit dwell within us and handle the matter, and that we be still. And I'll tell you, it's very difficult for me to be still with this guy over here, the things he was doing and the things he was saying. So the best thing you do in a situation like this, use wisdom. Pick up the phone, call the police. And that's what ended up happening. The police officer did arrive. The young lady was totally distraught. Prior to the police officer arriving, she came in and apologized to everyone in the laundromat for her behavior, for her language. You know what? She just grew a little bit in my eyes. Now, those in the laundromat understood why she was angry and why she was frustrated. But yet, she apologized because she knew her behavior was wrong. And she let that thing escalate to the point where it made everybody uncomfortable. I was really impressed with that. But still, not my fight. All right? We have to use wisdom in situations like this. Now, when the police officer came and he heard from her, the guy was outside, and they were trying to direct the officer outside to this gentleman. Now, me, I'm at the dryer, trying to get my things out of the dryer so I can get out of there. When the officer realized this was racially motivated, and he looked up and he saw me, he called for backup. I understand that. I understand that. I understand that quite well. Okay? Because he doesn't know all the players involved in this situation. So, what I did was I removed myself out of that equation. Don't come question me. Don't say anything to me. You and I don't have a conversation. You deal with those two. Well, by the time I got out the door, here are two more sheriffs that pulled up, and they had this gentleman outside. So here he is outside. They're talking to him, and I can hear part of the story. This guy was the biggest liar. But the people rally in the laundromat around this little girl. And they told the officers what took place. Well, the officers can't do anything. Only thing they can do is, take the report. You didn't lay hands on him. He didn't lay hands on you. Only thing I can do is take a report. That didn't fix or correct the problem. So right as I got to the back end of my car, here come friends of this little girl. And they came in force wanting to know, where is this guy? So now things are really about to take off. And so as God's Spirit and Jesus Christ abides in me, I had to let God's Spirit guide me out of the situation, regardless of how frustrated I was and how angry I was over what took place. It was wrong, it was ugly, but ugly was on the part of two people, not just one. Not just one. And so in a situation like this, which one of these individuals will Christ step up and defend? Well, neither one of them. They both were wrong. Now, the young lady did decide to repent, and she apologized to everyone, but she didn't apologize to him, and she was not about to apologize to him. And so in this situation right here, this is not a situation where I'm going to lay down my life for anyone. When we talk about laying down our lives, right, these individuals that we're talking about, family, our church family, our relatives, depending on the situation, we have to have wisdom in understanding what Christ meant when he said, there is no greater love. There is no greater love than this, that a person would lay down their life for his friends. Jesus Christ was laying down his life for you and for me and for all mankind. But we have a duty as well. We have a duty as well. Mark 12. Let's go to Mark 12. You know, the difficulty comes in, how do you love the unlovable? And when we talk about true love, now, this man and his behavior is not someone that you want to love. But yet, I had to remember that Christ even died for him. How do we, as God's people, love the unlovable? And does God want us to love the unlovable? Well, if Christ died for all, you know, here's something that we have to learn, family, today as we move forward into the future. Mark 12, the scribes ask, you know, which is the first commandment of all? Down in verse 28 of Mark 12, we read, Then one of the scribes came, having heard them reasoning together, perceiving that he had answered them well, he asked him, which is the first commandment of all? Verse 29, Jesus answered him, said, the first of all the commandments is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. This is the first commandment. Verse 31, and the second, Christ said, like it, is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these two. First, love towards God. Second, love towards your neighbor. In a heated situation like this, this guy becomes my neighbor. How do you love the unlovable? Well, in this type of situation, there's nothing you can do but pray for the individual and allow God's Holy Spirit to dwell within you to remove you out of the equation. Had I engaged and the police arrived, where do you think I would be? Okay? Where do you think I would be? So you have to use wisdom. We always get in those moments as men and say, well, if this happens, here's what I'm going to do. We don't know that. But if we allow Jesus Christ to abide in us and us in him, he will guide us out of those situations. What did he tell Peter? He said, when Peter picked up the sword and cut off the centurion's ear, Christ picked that ear and put it back on. He says, put down your sword. If you live by that sword, you're going to die by that sword. He says, if my kingdom was of this world, guess what? We would fight. We have been called out of this world. So guess what? There was a little fight in me the other night, but I had to let it go. I couldn't defend this young lady. Like I said, she was just as wrong as he was. But yet she apologized. He didn't. But still, we have to know the difference. Christ said the first commandment is towards God. The second is towards our neighbor. Verse 34, the scribe said to him, well said, teacher, you have spoken the truth. For there is one God and there is no other but he. And to love him with all your heart, with all the understanding, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And to love one's neighbor as oneself is more than all the whole burnt offerings and sacrifices that were given. But what he is showing us here is what true love does. True love, abiding in us, will help us to back down, to walk away. My grandfather used to always tell me, he says, you know, boy, a swift run is better than a bad stand any day of the week. You know, for a young, fiery teenage boy, that was kind of a hard lesson to learn, but he was right. He was right. Because years later, I remembered I was a senior in high school. And my buddy and I, we decided we weren't going to ride the school bus home because we rode our bikes to school. We were going to ride our bikes home. Well, we looked up one afternoon and we noticed that the school bus had stopped a whole mile before the last stop, which we would have been on. And the whole bus just unloaded. And we both looked at each other and said, ha, 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 this is not good. There's only reason the bus driver will unload an entire bus. Something's going wrong on the bus. And sure enough, there was. There was a fight that broke out on the bus. So the bus driver said, okay, everybody off the bus. You find your own way home, took off. Here's an elderly woman standing at her door screaming at two girls who were fighting in her lawn, telling them, just stop, stop, don't do that, stop. They weren't listening. They were too busy ripping and pulling each other's hair and swinging upon each other. And my buddy and I had this brilliant idea. We were going to break up the fight. We were going to be heroes. No one's breaking up the fight. So we rode our bicycles up to the scene, put our kickstands down, got off our bikes, walked over between the two ladies, addressed the situation, told them this is not good. This lady over here is worried. She's probably going to call the police. You all need to stop. What do you think happened? Well, let me put it this way. I got back on my bike, wiped the tears off my eyes, and took off. They turned against us and started fighting us for breaking up the fight. And so we realized, okay, you know what? My grandfather was right. A swift run is better than a bad stand. I was in a bad situation here. This wasn't my fight. Didn't use wisdom. Okay, well, teenage boy, who does? But didn't use wisdom, but got a right hook in my jaw that hurt for a very long time. You know, both of us did. And so, realizing and understanding that there are situations that we, family, need to remove ourselves out of. And God will lead us out of them if we let that true love that abides in us guide us and tell us, move on. To remind us that a quick run is better than a bad stand. To be that example. Christ said, if my kingdom was of this world, guess what, Peter? Then you can go ahead and take them down. Well, that's not what he said to me, and that's not what he's saying to you today. He says, the greatest commandments is first, love towards God, second, towards your neighbor. How do we love, family, the unlovable? How do we do it? Christ has showed us the way. He has showed us the way. Here's why I chose, with God's guidance and direction the other night, not to support the young lady and to remove myself out of the situation. Why did I not help them? The answer is found very clearly, as I'm reminded in John 15 and verse 19. John 15 and verse 19. We're reminded that if you were of the world would love its own. Christ has called us out of the world. Yet because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore, the world will hate you. Well, I learned that when I was about 18 years old, when I got punched in the face by a girl that was not happy with me trying to break up this fight. The world is going to love its own and hate you. Oh, I felt that hate for a few days, you know. And then I want to go find that girl and let her know how much I really felt about her. I'm just going to go up to her and tell her, I just need a hug. No, that wasn't it. I wanted to punch her back, but couldn't do that. But yet, Christ is reminding you and me. He says, I chose you out of the world. So now we have an example that we must follow. We must let that true love of Jesus Christ abide in us and us in him. And there are times, family, that we will make a sacrifice. A sacrifice, something valued, and life is valued. Our lives are valued. Let's go over to Hebrews 10. Let's be reminded of this sacrifice that was made for you and for me. Let's go over to Hebrews 10. Hebrews 10, let's drop down. Well, let's start. Let's go ahead and start in verse number 1. Hebrews 10 and verse 1. For the law, having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the things, can never, with these sacrifices, which they offer continually year by year, make those who approach perfect. Those sacrifices will not make anyone perfect. For then would they not have ceased to be offered? For the worshipers, once purified, would have no more consciousness of sin. But those sacrifices, there is a reminder, we're told, of sins every year. As we go through and we be reminded during the Passover season, the Days of Unleavened Bread, why Christ died, it's humbling for you and me to know and to be reminded of these things, because the sacrifices of bulls and goats did not take away the sin. Verse 5, therefore he came into the world, and he said, sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but a body you have prepared for me, and burnt offerings and sacrifices for sin you had no pleasure. Then I said, behold, I have come, in the volume of the book it is written of me to do your will, O God. Christ came to do the will of the Father. Our responsibility is also to do the will of the Father. He says previously, saying, sacrifice and burnt offerings and offerings for sin you did not desire, nor had pleasure in them, which are offered according to the law. Then he said, behold, I have come to do your will, O God. He takes away the first that may establish the second. So those burnt offerings were taken away, and a new offering is being presented. By that will we have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. Jesus Christ became that sacrifice for you and for me, willingly doing the Father's will. And the Father, it was a great sacrifice to him to offer up his Son. You know, as we're being reminded in John 3 and verse 16, we're reminded that God so loved the world that he gave us his only Son, that whosoever believe in him should not perish but have everlasting life. The former sacrifices will not provide that for you and for me. The sacrifice that Jesus Christ made to give us everlasting life is the true sacrifice that was made so that we can have that opportunity to live with him and to serve with him for all eternity. The true sacrifice was Christ. What does God expect of you and me through understanding this true sacrifice? I mean, it's every year as we go to rehearse the Days of Unleavened Bread and just put sin out of our lives and we be reminded of the Passover, we are looking every year and we're learning more and more about ourselves, the things that we need to do, to grow in, the areas we need to grow in, areas that we need to make improvement in. And every year we keep looking at ourselves, oh, I can't believe I did that again. Oh, I can't believe I'm asking God to forgive me for this again. You know, what am I going to learn? I'm not worthy. Well, we're right. We're not. But yet, Jesus Christ died to make it all possible for you and for me. He is the true sacrifice. We want to be like him. We want to grow and become every day like Jesus Christ. So what do we have to do? What do you and I have to do in order to reflect that love that abides in us on a daily basis? Well, let me share four thoughts with us this morning. Let me share four thoughts. They're not long, they're short. First of all, family, we must surrender all. There was an old song out, I remember when I was a kid growing up, I surrender all. But that's what we have to do. We have to make a sacrifice of ourselves and surrender our character and be reminded that our purpose is to do the will of the Father. Galatians 2 and verse 20. Point number one, Galatians 2 and verse 20. I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life which I have now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. We must be reminded, in order to become a true sacrifice ourselves, we must be sacrifice our daily lives for Jesus Christ in doing his will, in following his instructions, in following our Father's guidance and direction to his Son. Point number two, you can just write the scriptures down because, again, it's going to be short. James 4 and verse 7, we have to submit ourselves to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. This scripture came to mind the other night. I had to submit to God. That true love that abides in me had to be conveyed through me submitting to God. Not the situation, no matter how furious I was with it and how angry I was with this individual. He says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. And I noticed that man could not stay in my presence. If I came to the door, he went the opposite direction. What was driving him away? What was driving him away? Think about that. That was God's Holy Spirit. That was God's Holy Spirit. And as long as I submitted to God, this guy couldn't stay in the same space with me. He was being removed. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. We must begin to surrender all and become a living sacrifice ourselves for Jesus Christ. Point number three is found in James 1 and verse 22. Don't just be hearers of the word. We must be doers of the word. Because if we don't, then we're just deceiving ourselves. James 1 and verse 22. Be you doers of the word and not hearers only. You see, we can't come here and sit here every week and not do and act upon that love, that spirit that dwells within you and within me. We can't respond the way we want to respond. Can you imagine how difficult it was for me to keep my mouth shut the other night? Can you imagine how difficult it was for me not to go up there and break his nose? And yet, what would have made me more angry than anything else, he would have ran because he had already displayed what a coward he really was to pick on that little girl. But you see, the test was not for them. The test was for me. The test is for you. Okay? So we have to act upon the things that we read, the things that God shares with us. Point number four. It's found in James 4, verse 10. We must learn to humble ourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift us up. James 4, verse 10. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. It takes humility for you and to me to become the true sacrifice for Jesus Christ. Christ died for you and for me. And we should die daily, family, to sin. We should put on that love that dwells within us, and that love should be displayed outwardly to others. We have to discipline ourselves. We can't always say what we want to say. We can't always do what we want to do. We must continue to be reminded of the fact that Jesus Christ represents true love and that true sacrifice. And we want to grow and become like him every day. And so we have to submit ourselves to God. And we have to resist the devil. Because, you see, it's the adversary shoving us forward. You know, I saw a bigger picture the other night that would have unfolded, and then one that would have lost that night would have been me. I saw the picture. You all read the newspapers. You see what goes on. It takes one person being fearful of another and react the wrong way. And so we have to learn that when Christ says there is no greater love than to lay down your life for your friends, He's not referring to the world. He's not talking about the world. He's talking about you and me. He laid down his life for us, and family, we are to lay down our lives for him, walking in that love on a daily basis. It takes discipline. It takes us to overcome the world. And he reminds us, hey, I overcame the world. In me, you will have peace. You will have peace. Jesus Christ calls us his friends in verse 14 of John 15. He says, you are my friends if you do whatever I command you. What was the command, family? For us to love one another. The mama bear will lay down her life for her own. Jesus Christ laid down his life for you and for me. And he also did it for all of mankind. After watching the video, I searched other videos to see how interesting it was to watch black bears protect their young. Those cubs learn from their mother to protect their own and be willing to lay down their lives for them. Can you imagine what would have happened if one vehicle had come up on that bear and approached that bear and she was trying to get her cubs across? You know what would have happened? Sure you do. Your mom. You would attack that vehicle and everybody in it. These are my cubs out here, and we're going across this highway, and you sit there and you be still. Yeah, I can see all of you doing that. Even the ones that don't have kids, I can see you doing that. She would have rose up to attack that vehicle. But yet, it wasn't for her to do that. She did what she had to do. She set an example. She set an example for all of us. A black bear. 2-minute little clip inspired this message today. You know, family, what God is wanting us to see is that he gave us his son, Jesus Christ, and that was a great sacrifice. Jesus Christ became the example of true love and what that true love looks like, what that true love acts like. He told his disciples, if his kingdom was of this world, then we would fight. But his kingdom is not of this world. And so we can't fight. So what we have to do is humble ourselves in the sight of the Lord and be reminded that he will lift us up. The definition of sacrifice, the act of giving up something valued for the sake of something else regarded as more important or worthy. We are important to Jesus Christ and to God the Father. And we have to be reminded, come out of the world, stay out of the world. This is not our fight, because his kingdom is not of this world.